blue. Please feel free to stop me if any part of my explanation isn't clear. Where we are at this moment is not the Earth you know. It's another Earth.
There's only one Earth.
That's what we thought, until we made a freak discovery while experimenting with time-trolling technology. We uncovered the existence of parallel universes, and with that revelation came the possibility of constructing a corridor between your apocalyptic Earth and our own.
I don't understand.
It turns out that both your world and ours exist simultaneously in real time and space. In our world, there was no nuclear holocaust, no end of civilization, of science, of humanity. Our world lived on, progressed, and thrived.
Ryan scratched his chin, but said nothing. For the first time, he noticed the cuffs of the man's coat, how frayed they were. A button was missing, too. Curious if he was the bigwig scientist he claimed to be.
We believe that our parallel existences were virtually indistinguishable. Exact duplicates until the moment of divergence, which we calculate occurred on January 20th, 2001, the day of your nuclear holocaust. After that date, our realities and futures veered apart.
Sounds to me like a great big load of bullshit.
If you have a question, I'd be glad...
My question is, why are you bothering to make up this crap?
Ryan, if I may call you that, to convince you of the truth of my words, all I have to do is take you out of this chamber. The proof is there. It is absolute. I just want to prepare you for what you will see, to minimize the shock. Believe me, this is not your Earth.
Not Deathlands, but somewhere else? Huth shook his head.
In this place, the Earth you know is the faintest of faint shadows, only visible under the most intense light imaginable.
I want to talk to your Baron.
Baron?
Huth was momentarily puzzled by the term. Then he smiled.
Oh, I see. After the Holocaust, your democratic society devolved into feudal associations. I'm sorry, Ryan. We have no such single authority figure here.
Assuming for the moment that what you say about this place is true, that it isn't Earth, what do you want from Deathlands? Why have you sent your people there?
We want to help you recover from the disaster. To use our century of progress to bring light back to your Earth.
Ryan regarded the man skeptically. All I've seen of your progress is some ugly new ways to chill. We don't need that. We've got plenty of ways to die already.
What about those ways of dying? What about disease? We can put an end to that. And radiation sickness? We can decontaminate your environment, rebuild your cities, raise your people up from the mud. You have no idea what our science can do.
He looked at Ryan's face.
That lost eye of yours, for instance.
Yeah, what about it?
Surely you would prefer to have stereoscopic vision again. I can make you a replacement eye. The process will take about 3 hours, and another hour to implant and connect the new organ.
Why would you do any of that? What's in it for you?
In a real way, we have a common ancestry and heritage. You are our flesh and blood, our lost tribe. Ryan, think of it like this. If it hadn't been for the Holocaust, you would have a double here on our Earth, an identical twin. We can't desert you now that we've found you, especially now that we know what desperate straits your world is in. We owe it to you to help, so we can rejoin our futures.
Ryan considered the man's offer in light of the fact that the lives of his companions were being held as leverage to force him to cooperate. Coercion and compassion seemed a highly untrustworthy combination. But he really had no choice but to play along. For now. From the pocket of his lab coat, Huth produced a cutting tool similar to the one Nara had used on him earlier.
Let me take a bit of skin and I can get started on the eye at once.
So you can really clone me a new one? Ryan held out his open palm.
No, not clone. That is a very inefficient and outdated technique. I'm going to use the DNA code from your skin sample to modify all the cells in an already existing eye. When the process is complete, it'll be as much yours as the one you still have.
Won't the eye's original owner mind my using it?
The owner's dead. Donated his body parts to science.
The doctor took his sample and placed it in a vial. Then he gave Ryan a sterile pad to stanch the flow of blood from the nick. He placed the tube in his lab coat's breast pocket.
When we leave this chamber, we will move to another facility for a full debriefing and further medical and psychological testing. As I've tried to explain, our world is different from yours. Much more prolific. Perhaps alarmingly so. If it makes you feel uneasy, I can provide you with a drug to make you more comfortable.
I'm fine. Huth signaled, and the bulkhead door opened.
Follow me, please.
Then he started back across the catwalk. Ryan caught sight of Nara in the doorway ahead. She smiled, then turned her back to him, and along with a crew of heavily armed and armored non-scientists, apparently Sekhmen, began to push the crowd of whitecoats out of the way. The windowless hall beyond the door was jam-packed with scientists, all of them cheering, waving their hands, yelling at him. In the frenzy of enthusiasm, their words were a jumble of ecstatic nonsense. Ryan found himself jostled and pushed through a sea of bobbing heads and outstretched arms. The furor combined with the low ceiling to make the quarters feel smotheringly close. The contingent of Sekhmen kept the whitecoats back with batons, plowing through them in wedge formation. Those knocked to the floor by the Sekhmen were unceremoniously kicked and trampled by their excited colleagues, who seized the opportunity to get a little closer to Ryan. Following the wedge, with Nara on one side and Huth on the other, Ryan was rushed around a corner and into a waiting, open elevator. Half of the Sekhmen remained outside to keep the whitecoats from pushing into the car. Ryan, Nara, and Huth moved to the back wall, their protectors crushing in behind them. The interior of the car was gray, like the concrete walls outside, and well-worn. There was even less airspace to the ceiling. As the elevator doors slowly closed, Ryan noticed the grittiness underfoot.
Better get used to this kind of attention. You are a celebrity now.
Don't know that word.
Means you are famous, important. People will want to know you, to know all about you.
The elevator started to drop.
Of course, we will have to control the flow of information and the access. In your initial interview, you will only speak to a small select group, representatives drawn from each of the five. Then we will see to your medical needs.
Five? Like your insignia?
That's right.
What does it stand for?
Five global conglomerates. After the big shakedowns of the 90s, the controlling international economic powers were reduced to just five. As it turned out, the perfect number for efficient management of Earth's resources. The five are linked by treaties to compete peacefully and provide troops to protect mutual interests and defend individual freedom. This reorganization has allowed us to put an end to war.
Ryan looked around the packed car as it plummeted.
Lots of blasters in here for such a peaceful place.
Your safety is paramount to us. You've seen how excited people get at the sight of you. I assure you their affection is genuine. But we can't take any chances of your being accidentally injured.
Nara nodded in agreement, but there was something behind her eyes, something cloaked, as if Huth were leaving something important unsaid. When she realized that Ryan was reading her expression, or attempting to, she turned her face away. Ryan noticed that there was no floor indicator above the doors.
Long way down. No stops in between.
That's right. This is an express. It will let us out at road level.
Even without stops, the trip took 6 or 7 minutes. When the car doors finally opened, it was onto a narrow, apparently dead-end corridor that was practically filled with a black war wag. The fit between wag and wall was so tight that entry to the vehicle's red-lit interior had to be made through its rear double doors. Ryan was directed to one of the small jump seats spaced along the passenger compartment's side walls. The seats were jammed between the wag's girders. Behind them, the walls were a solid mass of gray pipe and wiring conduit. Inside the compartment, the odor of burnt plastic was as sharp as a razor. There were no windows in either the passenger or driver areas.